Welcome to the Vegan Report. My name is Ryan, and today we remember and honor the incredible life of Jane Goodall. The Jane Goodall Institute, founded by Jane herself, had those words to say about her passing. Throughout her life and remarkable career, Jane inspired generations of scientists, brought hope to countless people from all walks of life, and urged us all to remember that every single one of us makes a difference every day. It is up to us as to the kind of difference we make. To discuss Jane Goodall's life and her legacy, I have with me three people who have met her and who have been touched by her life work. I am joined by Dr. Marilee Jensvold, the primate communication scientist and associate director at Fauna Foundation, the only chimp sanctuary in Canada, and Friends of Washoe, a non-profit organization dedicated to the welfare of chimpanzees. She's also the very first guest of the Vegan Report. Yes, from episode 1, I can say with confidence that without her voice, this podcast would not exist. I'm also joined by Dr. Alan Kornberg, a pediatrician who first met Dr. Goodall in his role as board chair with the Global Federation of Animal Sanctuaries. Alan supports plant-based diet change as executive director of Nutrition for Families and as a board member with Physicians Association for Nutrition. Other current affiliations include treasurer for both Wilberforce Institute and Dharma Voices for Animals, two amazing nonprofits we have covered on this show. And lastly, Madeline Krasnow, founder and executive director of Justify, the only organization in the world focused on the human cost of animal experimentation and the uniquely intimate, often painful bond between lab workers and the animals they try to care for. She appeared many times on the podcast, a testament to how deeply I value her voice and contributions. Share this episode with the vegans you know. This episode is an inspiring invitation to action. For more meaningful conversations, follow the show. As always, thank you for listening. I guess we could start with a simple question about Jane Goodall, which is, what was your first contact with her? The first time maybe you met her, your first memory of her or with her? So who wants to answer the question
first? I'll go first.
Yes.
So my first time meeting her in person, I was a master's student at Central Washington University, where Washoe and the other signing chimps lived. And at the time they lived, this was in, I think, about 1988, they were living on the third floor of the psychology building. And my mentor, Roger Fouts, had brought them there in 1980. State had promised to immediately build a building where they could be outside. And then right after they moved there, the state went into financial exigency. I think that's the word for declaring bankruptcy. And so the chimps had been, you know, they were just sort of stuck in the psychology building. So he spent over a decade, he and his wife, Deborah Fouts, to build a building for the chimps on campus. And we were in the last phases of doing fundraising. We had to get the legislator, because it was on a university campus, a state-owned campus. We had to get the legislators to agree for the funding. And so Jane Goodall came and addressed the legislators. Everything stopped, all business stopped. And then we also had a gala, and she came to the gala. And so that was my first time meeting her. So I guess I'll stop there with the first time. I mean, it was just mind-blowing and overwhelming, and I'd already, worshipped everything about her because I wanted to work with apes, and she had just a couple of years before that published The Chimpanzees of Gombe, which was like the Bible of the chimp lab, because it's an incredible book. It's so well written and so perfectly illustrated and explains chimps and their behavior so well. So it was really, just sort of rooted in chimp behavior, which, that's me.
Thank you, Marilee.
I feel the need to jump in here because things are coming back to me from college right now. And I could have sworn that I reached out to you, Marilee. I don't know if that is true or if it was one of my intentions, because I even took sign language when I had started to learn about the chimps at the time that were being used in, like at Central Washington University. So this was one of the things that I became aware of, and had read Roger Fouts' books. So this is all coming back to me, which is very wild. So I guess I can also just like chime in that, Jane Goodall has been someone that I've looked up to for as long as I can remember. And when I went to college at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, I ended up studying zoology and child development and basically determined to follow in Jane Goodall's footsteps and work in primate conservation. And so, this obviously guided me in a number of ways, but I had the opportunity to meet her in 2013 when she was speaking at the University of Wisconsin's Earth Day event. And that was just incredible because, first of all, I waited in line for, I think, probably 3 hours to just, go and say hello to her. And I was with my mom. And when we finally got up to chat with her, I'm trying to figure out what do I say? What do I say? And I guess my mom was also having the same feeling. And so, it's that kind of like general, like, thank you for your work. You've always inspired me. And she was like, well, thank you, but what do you do? And I was just like, what does it matter what I do, right? But at the same time, I think it's so telling because that is who she is. She cares so much about what others, who others are and what they are doing, and is just someone who isn't trying to have the attention on herself. And I just, I've always looked back on that moment, which I guess now is over 10 years ago, and reflected on just, her exquisite leadership in, really being someone who empowers others and inspires them to do good. So, a little about me.
Thank you, Maddie. Alan?
Yeah, the first time I met her, it was probably 7 or 8 or 9 years ago. I was, Ryan, as you know, and we worked together at Dharma Voices for Animals. I work with a whole bunch of different animal protection charities, and so I've been on the board of the Global Federation of Animal Sanctuaries, and so I live outside of Boston, and so I was. So one of our sanctuaries, foster parrots, totally unrelated to chimps or primates, is in Rhode Island. So just for me, easy trip. And I was intending to just visit at some point for just a board member. And so when I was going back and forth with the executive director of foster parrots, she said, "Well, here's a few days you can come, but just so you know, Dr. Goodall's coming to visit with us on this day. Would that work for you?" And it was like, I might, it's like if somebody, the president, was coming, I might have checked my calendar, but it was, Dr. Goodall, and I didn't even check my calendar, right? So I hadn't met her, and so she, she's as both Mary Lee And Maddie, you have to describe them. I mean, she's lovely and self-effacing, and was is always looking at what about the other person? And so I was really touched. There were about 50 people at Foster Parents that day. Well, I should also mention this as kind of karma. I still get Nat Geo, National Geographic's physical magazine, and probably dating myself here, right? And so in my mailbox the day before I went to Foster Parrot, Nat Geo came, and the 20-something year old in khakis, Dr. Goodall, was on the cover. So that seems I took that seemed like karma. And so she came to Foster Parrot, and she was carrying three stuffed animals. She was carrying a chimp, shockingly, and a cow, and either a mouse or a rat. And so, of course, making the point about what we do and shouldn't do to the animals that we share the planet with. And so it was all very, very touching. She spent like 50 people there, and somehow, when I practiced medicine for a while, and in medicine, like many professions, you try very hard when you're in the room with a patient or for some people a client, that all that matters is that person, right? And so it's a and she is the best person in the world for that. And it was amazing how everyone that met with her, including me, and to a lot of people there, felt like there was no stopwatch running at all. It was just really amazing. So she I was touched. She asked me if say maybe because I'm a doctor, so a young vet who's starting a charity, that she asked if I would support or mentor, and so like, yes, ma'am, and then the last part of the story for me, which was a was brownie points. My wife grew up idolizing Dr. Goodall, and so I asked Jane if she would sign the Nat Geo cover to my better half, which she did. And so that was like the best. It wasn't a very anniversary prep. That was like the best present ever. So it was a really good get a jail free pass. Half kidding, but she really, I mean, she touched me in a lot of ways. But it was, I mean, the two most important ways was her nonverbal messaging about all animals, and then as my colleagues here have described, the way that she made the other person feel like the center of the world and not her. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to share that. So.
Yes, I want to get back to that and discuss, how come she had such a deep effect on people around her. In one interview, someone asked her basically that question, and she talked about the Jane effect, or the Jane magic. That's what she, those are the words she used. So what explains that magic?
She was probably one of the most gifted public speakers I have ever encountered in my life. I mean, it's just amazing how, everybody's just so enthralled with what she was saying. So it's just a really, really gifted speaker. And I mean, that one-on-one thing is, yes, she makes you feel like you're the center of the world, but I was just so struck. I saw her speak a couple of times. One time was at PAL Books in Portland. I think she was on book tour, and I had the opportunity to introduce her. And then she launched into her talk, and it was, I mean, she's just such a gifted speaker. It's such a talent. And she's just able to pull people in, incredibly charismatic person.
I would add, last time I saw her was probably a couple of years ago, and she was giving a talk in Boston, and so my wife and I attended and spent a couple of minutes and said hello and all that, but attended her talk, and so she was maybe a few months short of 90 then, and so she and she was she traveled from she traveled to Boston from someplace out of country, so it was a significant trip. And she's on the stage in this, maybe like 2 or 3,000 person, theater kind of, building. And it was, I was kind of shocked about how good she was. I didn't, wasn't just, the presence she had, given her other talents and attributes, she would, I mean, I just sort of assume, which always gets you in trouble, that she would, be soft-spoken and, she would touch the audience in her special way, but not as this charismatic public speaker. Plus, she was just short of 90, and she just got off of like a 6 or 7 or 8 hour flight. And I was like, oh my God. So what you said is some combination of probably good genes and experience, but this quiet, lovely, touching determination, all wrapped into one, special person.
Yeah, I think she is a like she was an incredibly thoughtful person in her use of language and how she communicated about the chimpanzees and just the natural world itself, which I have always found really inspiring and also welcoming. She doesn't, or she wouldn't shy away from the urgency of issues, but she also had a way of talking about it that helped still motivate people to feel like they could do something. And I think that's not an easy task. It's difficult to talk about, heartbreaking, like the suffering that's going on in the world, and then at the same time be like, there's something we can do. There are reasons for hope, right? And I think she had a really just excellent way of going about that. I know it always inspired me despite the harm taking place. I mean, I think of there's a quote that's been going around recently where she says something along the lines of, like the amazing human brain has already discovered all of this, and she was talking about animal research in particular. And I just like the way that she's sort of like, humans are amazing, and that's why we should be able to do human relevant research. You know, like she's the way she talks, it's just not demonizing. It's inspiring, it's empowering. And that gentle, like thoughtful presence and approach was also very obvious to me in like photography and videography where I would see her with the chimps. So I just it really felt like we got to know this genuinely good person. And yeah, I think that just resonates with a lot of people.
If we talk about the legacy of Jane Goodall, what should be, how should we remember her? Is Jane Goodall this amazing scientist who has done so much in our understanding of primates? Or is she this activist for, denouncing what's happening with climate change and the climate crisis? She's a complex figure in that sense. And so, how should we remember her?
I'll go first on this one because, I mean, to me, sort of the trail of how she ended up, I mean, I mean, like for me in the beginning and in her beginning, it was really just about the chimps, right? She wanted to live in the jungle and she was just curious and natural ethologist. But then she ends up being this activist that has such a global impact, right? I mean, it's almost as if like the chimp part of it is so under all of these layers of things. But she realized right away, that the only way to help chimps was to broaden and to start talking about the environment. And then, then she built from there. I mean, just brilliant to be starting the Roots and Shoots in the 80s, and getting children involved. And so just sort of like building from there. But I think, what motivated her to be what got her going was the chimps. But just amazing. Like I realized after she passed, and I was reading all the media, it's like It's like people aren't even talking about chimps. They're talking about all the other stuff she did, which is pretty amazing, right?
It was a story that I had I think it was in one of the many videos about her, and it was the Roots and Shoots program in the DRC, Democratic Republic of the Congo. And so she there were children that were doing some combination of conservation and animal protection work with and several of militia guys came by with their semi-automatics and all that, and she was there, and so this is almost like one of those, and then the sun came out kind of, and they put their guns down and helped the kids, so so there's that that touch in some way. It's very special. So
Maddie, did you want to answer the question too?
Yeah, I don't know that I have much to add. I feel like Mary Lee covered a lot of it. I mean, I think she just, inspired people in ways that, translated so much into different people's personal lives and made sort of this journey to becoming an activist actually more accessible for like the general public. And I love that it kind of sprouted from her experience with the chimps because I also see that in myself in what happened working in a primate lab with the monkeys, even though I was, I ended up there in the first place because I wanted to work in conservation like her. It was that experience that made my world sort of grow and made me, forced me to not just look at the impacts we have on animals in labs, but the impacts we have on animals in all these different industries, and also the human cost in animal research and beyond, human suffering all over the world, and how the environment ties into all of this. And so I appreciate, the fact that we got to kind of see that growth with her, and also seeing that reflected more broadly in the rest of us. I think it's important, and it shows that I think being an activist is, sometimes that word can, I think, scare people, or it sounds, I don't know, there's just this connotation with it. But when it comes to Jane and being an activist, somehow it softens the term and makes it more accessible, but also inspiring to be.
Marilee, what is exactly her contribution to our understanding of primates and, advancing science? I know that she never earned an undergraduate degree, that she went right to having, a PhD, studying to become PhD. So what do we owe her in terms of, advancing our knowledge?
Yeah, well, I guess, I mean, so the story is that she was Louis Leakey wanted to send three basically naive people into the field to study apes, and so she was the chimp branch, and there was Brute Galticus with orangutans and Dian Fossey with gorillas, and I mean the there hadn't been long-term field studies. So, researchers would sort of pop in and take a quick snapshot and then pop out. So our understanding of the lives of chimps, she's the one that brought that to us. So by telling their stories of the individuals and the relationships and the drama, and all of the goings on, and she was, her field site continues today, but these years and years of knowing these individuals and how they interacted, and And so that really shined a different kind of a light. She also understood them as individuals with personalities. She didn't know that it was a bad thing to give them names and to talk about emotions. And really, in the 60s and 70s, you did not do that. And so that was tremendous, tremendous. And what she's known for is they tell the story of that, she observed them making tools, and that was a first. But I really think just the understanding sort of the depth of what's going on in chimpanzees' lives, and that it's so much like the drama in our own lives. The best documentary, People of the Forest, it's like a 90-minute documentary of the story of the lives of from Gombe. And I mean, that's just incredible to me. That's so impactful, and that's what she contributed to me. Besides, by the fact that she was spending time, I can't show you the book because my computer is propped on it. It's one of the thicker books in my library, but it's this coffee table book that goes it through each one of the behavioral contexts, so grooming and all the behaviors in there, and it's just so interesting because she makes it. It's written. It can be pretty dry stuff, but it's written in such a way that it's fascinating and just so detailed. And she was just an incredible ethologist, really, at heart.
Thank you. Back in 2015, Jane became vegan, and looking through articles about her legacy, her impact in the world, I feel like her commitment to all animals, not only primates, is often put to the side. Alan, you mentioned how she was interested in sanctuaries that were not only primate sanctuaries. What should we say about the fact that she became vegan at, such an advanced age, in 2015? She was a lifelong vegetarian, I think, but what made her become vegan, and what does it mean, in terms of the legacy that she leaves behind?
Just one observation about that. It's interesting. When I mentioned when she came to Forest of Paradise, she carried, three stuffed animals, a chimp and a mouse and a cow. And so, of course, one there are several stuffed animals one could use to represent the travesties of eating animals and factory farming. And usually cows and pigs and chickens are the first three that come to mind. But so I hadn't really thought about that, but the fact that she carried a cow, may in fact have been her way of messaging to herself, perhaps. Now I'm getting a little beyond my pay grade, but to others certainly about vegetarians better, but it's not really there. So the one other comment I would make about that, which so GFAS, where I first met her, she works with equine and wildlife and farmed animal sanctuaries, and she was interested in all of that and didn't really talk to me much about the GFAS. Supports a good number of primate and a few great ape sanctuaries. She didn't really talk about that. She talked about the other sanctuaries. And she also wondered if GFAS would be interested in a program in, she didn't use this language, but global south countries where the sanctuaries that support wildlife, save wildlife, if they might find a way to also take care of some of the dogs and cats that are in a bad way in that environment. And so she, this was in. Seemed to me like it was a multi-day conversation, but it was probably well in 5 minutes, and so it's all touching and impressive both. So yeah.
I think the transition seems like it was probably pretty natural for her. I found that I myself kind of went along that same path. When you respect and care about animals, whether it's, in the for Jane, it started with the chimps, right? And when you see like the connection that she established with them, and how much she sort of, her life revolved around them, and she understood them as individuals, with feelings and interests. It's natural to start to think about these other animals, no matter what industry they are kind of being used in, right? And so, I think it makes sense that over time, as she started to think about these bigger issues and how they intersected with the protection of chimpanzees, such as the environment, you're going to start to recognize that, the way we are raising animals for food is unsustainable and contributing to, a myriad of issues such as the climate crisis and deforestation that, of course, is impacting, chimps. And similarly, I had the same sort of growth when I was not a vegetarian or a vegan when I, grew up loving animals and ended up, working in a primate lab to pursue primate conservation. But it was my feelings starting to change about the use of animals, of course, these monkeys in labs, but also starting to question, well, if I care about them, why don't I care about the cow that's on my plate? And, a few years later, then starting to recognize how the dairy and the egg industries work, and ultimately doing my best to eliminate the use of animals in my life. So I think it was a pretty natural progression for her, and inspiring to see her do that and continue to kind of be this figure that so many people look up to when there can be so much stigma around the term vegan or eating vegan or whatever it, however you want to talk about it.
There's always learning, and there's always change and positive change and all that. Just observing, though, and of course, she wasn't an average person in any way. But having done, a good amount of plant-based nutrition work, the number of people past the age of 80 who've become vegan is at that point in one's life is vanishingly small. So it's just noting that as well. So. Yeah.
And in any case, I realized, since her passing, how much she meant for animal rights activists that want to create this vegan world. I think I've seen PETA even building kind of a space to commemorate Jane Goodall at their headquarters. And so she meant a lot, and the fact that she became vegan, that just rooted her into, this figure, this icon of the animal rights movement. In preparation for this conversation, I watched some of her last interviews, and in many of them, she mentions how this world is kind of dark, and we're living in such a dark era. I would love to talk about, the issues that made her stand up, take the mic, at 90, in her 90s, doing media tours and talking about them, and raising her voice, giving her voice for those issues. What are those? What is this dark word and issues that she was talking about and that alarmed her so much?
I would make, if I could, I would just make two observations. At risk of being a little bit like a politician here and not quite answering the question that you asked, but I would just make a couple of observations about her. And so one is that she always and wrote a book on this, always believed in hope. And so she always saw the good side of people. I as I read what she wrote, I sometimes thought She's more understanding and more hopeful than I am on most days. And but she always, I think always, but frankly would see the positive side and the opportunity that people will come to their senses and make change. And the other thing I would say about her is that she didn't seek fame, and she learned that she had become this icon. That was one of the most well-known people in the world, and she saw that as a I guess a responsibility, and that a sort of as a responsibility to utilize that. It wasn't what she sought, but she had it, and she wouldn't waste it, and she would utilize it for the good, for the kinds of causes you're talking about. So I'm sorry if I didn't, but I'm reflecting on, I'm sort of in this intellectual and emotive space about her right now, and so that's what comes to mind for me.
Yeah, I heard her talk about how someone offered her a private jet, and she declined. How there were big oil companies offering funding to her nonprofits, and how she declined that important funding because, again, of her commitment, deep commitment to those ethical principles. But yeah, Marilee.
Well, I was just gonna say, I remember one of the times that she visited us in Ellensburg. I think after we got that new building, she came to see it and to see how the chimps were doing there. And so that would have been, in the mid-90s, and the U.S. government was putting an embargo on somebody, or sanctions on somebody. And I remember her mentioning, just going, "Oh, the sanctions, are, it's just awful, what it's doing to the people." And I was a grad student, so at that point in life, all I could think about was being a graduate student and completely immersed in that world and unaware of the news. And it was, so I it makes me think, even then, but she was global, she was a global person. So sort of being aware, and deeply empathetic for people. She just didn't live in this bubble. Like, she was all over the place. And I did watch that, that it's sort of morbid, but really, the Netflix documentary that was recorded before she died, right? So, but I think that darkness that you're talking about was more intense because, I had seen her when she published Reason for Hope, and she really was hopeful and in trying to inspire hope. And I felt like with that one, it's this Netflix documentary, it's like, the world is imploding and we're running out of time. She still had that message of, you as an individual can do something. That I do feel like, and without getting into American politics and stuff, because really it is bigger than that, but I just felt like she was not, maybe she didn't sound as hopeful. She sounded like we're in a desperate place, and that was kind of her, that was the take home for me. So yes, a very dark place.
Yeah, I felt the same way listening to her. Maddie, did you want to add something?
So to be honest, I've seen a clip from it, but I have not watched it yet. And the reasoning being that I haven't, emotionally prepared myself, for it. I was actually back at my alma mater at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, doing outreach on campus to students about the primate labs on campus and my experience working in the lab, when I found out that she had died. And I I just immediately burst into tears. Like it was just this like overwhelming grief for someone that I really did not know well, right? Like I know that I had, wonderfully got to meet her for a couple of minutes. But aside from that, she was really someone that I just looked up to and admired. And yet, like the heaviness of her sort of leaving the planet and the hope that I feel like she has always kind of represented, has been a lot to sort of take in, especially because it felt a little full circle being back on campus where I had met her and learning of this news. And we're all gonna die one day, right? But it's just with Jane, I think I was hoping it just wouldn't happen somehow, which is how I feel about like my dog, for example. There's just certain, there's certain people that you just, feel like this even bigger loss. And I don't blame her for being, for struggling to find that hope and feeling less hopeful because the world right now is it's a really tough place. And so we do have a lot we need to figure out and find our place in it all as Jane would have wanted in terms of reducing that harm. But yeah, I think it's hard and it's overwhelming to kind of, I don't know, feel optimistic all the time. And we needed to see probably that Jane struggles with that too. Struggled. I clearly struggle to put Jane in past tense.
If I could build on sort of what Maddie has just brought up, and the day for me that I learned about it, I had spent the morning. We actually had grief counselors that had come to Fauna, so I had zoomed in to the meeting because we experience so much loss with elderly chimps there. And one of the things that the grief counselors talked about was, yes, when someone passes you, there's a loss. But that doesn't take away all the memories and the things that you have. So, they were just trying to help people focus on that, which to me was phenomenal. And then later I was on another Zoom meeting with some of the sanctuary directors, other chimp sanctuaries. And, someone was looking for something and was like, suddenly the news popped up and they said, wow, Jane has just died. But I think just to sort of play on that, to me, we have so much to be grateful for that she was on this planet and that she had all of the pieces in place. And what a perfect combination of someone that had everything that she had in terms of her personality, the way that she was able to get her message out to people, the situations that taught her, and moved her to do what she had done, and then and to have an incredible impact. I'm just so grateful that she was part of the planet and that she brought all of that to the planet. And so I think we have just so much to be thankful for that way, and that she also was able to do that until she was 91. I mean, she was still giving talks. So, wow. Could we all be so lucky as to go how she did with our boots on?
Alan, did you want to add something?
Yeah. So when I learned that she passed, and of course I was somber, and as Maddie, as you said, I mean, it was, we sort of all had in our minds that, well, she's never gonna leave this part of the universe. But maybe because I'm obviously a much more superficial person than my colleagues here, my thoughts and reactions were of a sort of a different after that initial. It was sort of, and I work from home, so I wasn't physically around colleagues. So I had two flashbacks, and maybe more, but two. One was video. The vet that Dr. Goodall introduced me to work with, Anna Categorigas from Veterinary Global Aid. She now has two young children, but she introduced Jane to her first baby when the baby was just 2 or 3 months old. And so I was looking at video that Anna sent to me, and she was just like anybody else's, like, loving grandmother. Was the total full reaction. You would think she was the family grandmother. So it was just, it was that, and then so that touched me a lot. And obviously, and the other one was maybe a quick humorous piece, and then I'll so. But my wife and I were just Ramsey. What was sitting about, and Ramsey was irritated at me about something that I'm sure she had reason to be irritated with me, about, and nothing monumental. But, and so my mobile goes off, and I was the last person in the world to be on Shane's speed dial. But she was talking to me about Anna Categorigas and supporting Veterinary Global Aid, and so she had, so Dr. Goodall actually called me up, which is, and so I saw that on my phone, which, and that was probably the one of two times that ever happened. So I'm not in her. It was not in her, A-list universe. But I picked up the phone and ran. So you can imagine your partner is like a little irritated with you, and then the phone rings and you ignore your partner and pick the phone up, right? And so Ramsey gave me this look, and I whispered to her, "It's Jane," and she's like, "Who's Jane?" And I said, "Jane Goodall." And so it was like everything changed, of course. And whatever she was mad at me about went away as well, of course. But so I had those kind of flashbacks, which made it easier for me in some ways. So yeah, I'm getting tears to my eyes just telling those stories now. Isn't that something? So yeah.
That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing. Quick question. Why do you think she had that multi-generational effect? Younger people, middle-aged people, older people. She touched every age ranges. How do you explain that?
I think it was. I think it was very intentional on her part, right? I mean, she wanted to be able to reach out to younger people, and she knew, and the Jane Goodall Institute knew. Like you've got to reach out to younger people. They're going to be the next generation. They're the ones that are going to be making the impact, and. I mean, older, I guess it depends on which slice of time. Like now, everybody, because she's been in people's living rooms basically with all the documentaries, and she wrote so many books. And she's touching on so many different things, I think that that's why she was able to transect across. The lifespan of people and catch them and also chimps are really compelling too, so that is a pretty easy way to get people's attention.
Thank you. Any more theories?
I don't know if I have a theory, but I just wanted to say that it was interesting because there's obviously a generation now who still does. There's individuals from that generation that do know, but I also experienced some individuals from, basically who are in college now who were like, "Wait, can you remind me who is Jane Goodall? Like, what did she do?" And I was just like, jaw drop. Like, what do you mean, what did she do? What do you mean, who is Jane Goodall? So that was really surprising to me. And I wouldn't have necessarily even realized that was a thing if I hadn't been at my campus when this happened, because I did actually have people who came up and Jane seems to always come up because people are always asking, how did you end up in the primate lab? Well, I wanted to work in primate conservation like Jane. And then I got a lot of these, oh my God, like because everyone was starting to learn about the news. But there were a few individuals who kind of looked at me and were like, who is she? And so I was just like, oh no. You know what this means? We have to make sure that she lives on, right? And you know, she has ensured that in a number of ways, but it hurt my heart a little to think that there's individuals who don't know who she is and sort of her journey of, again, sort of beginning honed in on the chimpanzees and how that grew to care so much about the natural world and everyone who shares it, human and non-human.
Actually, she also we've all talked about this, but she met people where they are. She was there for others, and so I mean that was a piece of it. There may also be a from my wife, was so we're a generation younger than Dr. Goodall, and but just one. And so she there may also be a gender piece about having Ramsey growing up with this. So Leakey wanted an experience, three people to go out in the field, but if you're learning about her, like, oh my God, this young woman who had no creds, right? And in the 60s, where the Mad Men era, right, was able to do this. So I think for that generation, and maybe subsequently, I don't have the right chromosomes to comment on this really thoroughly, but I think for my wife, certainly there was that as well, and chimps, of course, but that how that happened with this woman.
Thank you, Alan. I guess to end this conversation, I want to ask you, how can we honor her legacy, her life? I think the message she brought in every interview and public appearance was, get off your couch, do something, be part of the solution, make a difference. So yeah, how do we honor her legacy?
Turn off the water when you brush your teeth. That was one of
Oh
her dogs. That
no.
was the thing you could do. Turn off the water, brush your teeth. You know, so that and I think her point is such a simple thing, but if everybody's doing it will make a big impact. So, you know, the just remembering it, I think I'm shocked with what you said, Maddie, that people didn't know who she was. So you already said it. I mean, we really have to continue and it'll be interesting to see how the Jane Goodall Institute does that. They're certainly well positioned to do that, and yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, Jane believed in collective action and also like localized action, like do what you can in your own community. And I think these are, again, powerful because it's empowering and can also make some of these big, overwhelming, heartbreaking issues feel a little more manageable to handle. And you know, in my kind of more like the more personal issue that I have kind of dedicated my life to, that of course has many intersecting components, but the animal research industry, I continue to think about how she really represents wanting science to exist alongside compassion and that these things shouldn't be separate. And how much she has sort of influenced the scientific field, and how much, you know, more the scientific field can do to align to like the compassionate principles that Jane represented. Because she really, stood up to things that are still, I think, prevalent in the scientific field, especially when it comes to animal research, like trying to not individualize these creatures. And that's exactly what she did not stand for. And so, I think she's helped give permission to a lot of us to think critically about what we're doing to animals in labs and animal research in general, and help us speak out about it.
Alan, did you want to?
Yeah, no, I mean, my colleagues have said it well. There's this, and each of them, does it in their own work. I mean, there's this, there's doing what you can, but there's this determination, keep your determination, and while not being Pollyannish about her, the looking for the good side of people, seeing hope, try, the you could. Catch more flies with agave than with vinegar, kind of is true. I mean, it depends on the person, what you're trying to affect change. Sometimes a little bit of that you need to, but her way of, being determined and getting on the right side of people, I think is a lesson that, I continue to try to emulate and sometimes honor in the breach, but I think it's a really, really good lesson from Mark.
It is kind of unbelievable how successful she was at getting, these true messages of justice out there while still having so many people on her side. And that doesn't mean that it immediately changed people, right? Like she went vegan, yes, but not all of these people who look up to her have gone vegan. But she was able to bring a lot of these conversations, just out there on a larger scale than I think many people have successfully done or been able to do. And I think that shows who she is and how, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I just think of that as something that is worth considering as activists and as people who care about the world, humans and non-humans, and how we can, make things better and reduce suffering.
Yeah, what a pleasure to have welcomed the three of you who greatly valued Dr. Jane Goodall. And thank you so much for your answers, for your insights, and for sharing your dear memories of her and of what she brought in your life. Thank you.
In the place where I am now, I look back over my life. I look back at the world I've left behind. What message do I want to leave? I want to make sure that you all understand that each and every one of you has a role to play. You may not know it, you may not find it, but your life matters, and you are here for a reason. And I just hope that that reason will become apparent as you live through your life. I want you to know that whether or not you find that role that you're supposed to play, your life does matter, and that every single day you live, you make a difference in the world, and you get to choose the difference that you make. I want you to understand that we are part of the natural world. And even today, where the planet is dark, there still is hope. Don't lose hope. If you lose hope, you become apathetic and do nothing. And if you want to save what is still beautiful in this world, if you want to save the planet for the future generations, your grandchildren, their grandchildren, then think about the actions you take each day, because multiplied a million, a billion times, even small actions will make for great change. I just hope that you understand that this life on planet Earth isn't the end, I believe, and now I know, that there is life beyond death, that consciousness survives. I can't tell you from where I am secrets that are not mine to share. I can't tell you what you will find when you leave planet Earth. But I want you to know that your life on planet Earth will make some difference in the kind of life that you find after you die. Above all, I want you to think about the fact that we are part, when we're on planet Earth, we are part of Mother Nature. We depend on Mother Nature for clean air, for water, for food, for clothing, for everything. And as we destroy one ecosystem after another, as we create worse climate change, worse loss of diversity, we have to do everything in our power to make the world a better place for the children alive today and for those that will follow. You have it in your power to make a difference. Don't give up. There is a future for you. Do your best while you're still on this beautiful planet Earth that I look down upon from where I am now. God bless you all.